This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Westwood One NCAA Radio Network with the call. Alabama going to the Final Four. We are Unsportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, along with Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen with you. Nate Oates is the head coach of Alabama, and they are going to the Final Four, and he is kind enough to join us now. Coach, congratulations on an unbelievable run. Be honest, you guys have been very good the last couple of years, but is there any part of you that is an ounce surprised that you did it, that you got there to the Final Four?
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy to do. See, we were the number one overall seed last year and in a one-game elimination tournament. You got one-off shooting night, somebody else has a great night, and you get eliminated. And there's a lot of really good coaches that have had really good teams that don't make it to a Final Four. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you hope to make it. You think you've got a chance to make it. You plan on making it, but it's not easy to get there. So a little bit surprised, especially with the way we were playing late. You know, we weren't healthy. We weren't playing our best basketball at the end of the regular season. And then our guys really got it together going into this tournament.
And, Coach, I wanted to ask you about the change that we've seen from your team in this tournament as opposed to the regular season. I know you're a big believer in analytics. You hired an analytics consultant going into the NCAA tournament. How has that impacted your brand of basketball that we've seen throughout March Madness?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a third-party analytics company every year since I've been here. So we didn't just hire a new one going into this, but, that, you know, I think everybody kind of starts to realize that you get a bigger spotlight on you in the NCAA tournament. So we use analytics for a lot of things, but I mean, it's really trying to figure out the best way to win the game. You know, how to get the most efficient shots, how to force the other team into taking the most inefficient shots. And shoot, it was, you know, they've helped us a lot on both sides of the ball, but our defense wasn't very good for a lot of this year. It was top three in the country two out of the last 3 years before this year. But our guys have really stepped up, you know, their attention to detail, their focus, their effort these last 2 weeks to make this run. Our defense has been significantly better these last 2 weeks than it was most of the year.
Coach, well, coming up next, you have a UConn team who's been pretty dominant throughout the tournament. Their head coach, Dan Hurley, said that the team is, quote, bulletproof. As you're scouting them and getting ready for this matchup in the Final Four, how do you make sure that your team is able to break through?
Yeah, I've known Danny for a long time. He and his brother were the ones that got me into this business, so I've watched them fairly frequently, and he's pretty accurate. They don't have too many flaws. They're the only team in the country that's top five in both offense and defensive efficiency. You know, so you got to get a really good defensive game plan, but you better figure out how to score on them, too. I mean, Illinois is a great basketball team, and they managed to go on a 30-0 run on Illinois, which is unheard of in a big game like that. So, you know, they've got size inside. They've got great guard play. You know, I don't think you can just go in and do things the way you've always done them. You try to look at teams that have had success, and when you're looking at some of that, some of it's they just miss shots. So, going to do a lot of praying that they're off on Saturday, and we're on fire. I think that's part of the game plan for this one.
At least you're honest. We're talking with Nate Oates, Alabama head coach, getting ready for the Final Four against UConn this weekend. We're on Sportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio. Coach, three of the four Final Four coaches have been high school head coaches. You just merely 11 years ago, so it's an unbelievable rise. What is it about coaching high school that can get you so ready for this high level of college basketball?
You know, I think on some level, coaching is coaching. You know, you've got to be able to motivate the kids, build relationships with them. You know, it was easier to build some of the relationships when you got those kids in class every day and you see them all the time and you kind of understand the importance of building relationships with kids. So I think that's a big part of it. And then we tried to run our high school program a lot like a college program with the video scouting and all the stuff that we did then. But Yeah, it's kind of cool. Me and I've known Kevin Keats a while. Me, Danny, and Kevin were all high school coaches not very long ago, and now we're all in the Final Four. So it's kind of cool, to be honest with you.
Coach, how has the transfer portal and NIL impacted college basketball as a whole and in your team specifically?
I mean, look, you know, if you look at our roster, there's a lot of transfers, and – you know, some of them were, shoot, a lot of them came up from mid-majors. I mean, you look at Mark Sears from Ohio. He's from Alabama. You look at Grant Nelson. You know, he's at North Dakota State. You look at Aaron Estrada. That was the CAA Player of the Year at Hofstra. You know, we've got, shoot, Nick Pringle even started at Wofford before he went to junior college, and then we got him. So, like, four of our five current starters. And then Reitzel's been a starter. He got hurt. He came from Cal State Fullerton. So, five of our top six guys started their careers at lower levels. And, that you know, you kind of look at UConn's got transfers that transferred up. I mean, you know, you kind of go through all of the programs. It's almost like, you know, if a kid gets overlooked coming out of high school these days, like, it's not a problem. Just go prove yourself wherever you can get in, and you're going to have a chance to go play at the highest level, you know, if you can prove yourself at some level of division, shoot, even Division II basketball. There's Division II transfers that are playing well on some of these high major teams now. So I think the transfer portal has allowed some teams to get older, and you kind of see some of these older, more veteran groups been successful. You know, we've had success with freshmen. Last year we've done it both ways. Last year we started three freshmen, and we're the number one overall seed in the country. This year we're starting a little bit older group and more transfers, but there's different ways to do it now, and I think you're seeing programs be able to, you know, kind of change their roster over pretty quickly year to year with the transfer portal now.
Coach, I know that a lot of coaches that have success have a certain network of people that they go to for advice or to help them through situations. And in reading about you, I read that one of the people that's in your network is Nick Saban, obviously legendary former head coach, the football coach at Alabama. He knows a thing or two about national championships and winning big games. Can you share with us a piece of advice that Coach Saban has given you to get to this point?
I mean, Coach has been great. I think he's one of the best coaches of team sports and modern coaching history, regardless of what sport or what level. So, you know, I count it a privilege to have been, you know, shared the same campus with him for 5 years. And I talked to him, I kind of called him, you know, and now that he's retired, he's probably got a little more time on his hands, and I certainly not going to try to bug him all the time with advice, but it, you know, when you've got a guy like that, that'll take your calls, I think you'd be an idiot not to try to pick his brain occasionally. So I called him kind of between the regular season. Well, actually, after the conference tournament, we lost in the first round. And, like, how do we get these guys refocused? What do we have to do? You know, his national championship teams, most of them, I think there was only one that was undefeated. Most of them took a loss at some point. He had to get them refocused. So, you know, he kind of gave me – you know, he watches all of our games. You're like, you got to get these guys moved to the next play better. Like, you know, and I knew it, but sometimes it helps an outsider that's not there every day to, like, really shine a light. So we've kind of used the word next with these guys. Like, we got to be better next play, next action, next game. Like, quit dwelling on, shoot, whether it's a big run we're on and it's a positive, whether it's a bad run that we just gave up to the other team, whether the referee just blew two calls in a row and you're ticked off at the – like, you got to be able to move to the next play better. And we weren't doing the best job of that before, and I think we've done a much better job of that in this tournament. That was a big piece of advice going into this tournament for us.
So now that Saban is not the head coach, Coach Oates, and you guys are in the Final Four, is Alabama a basketball school?
Listen – We're only 18 national championships behind football, so we got a lot of catch up to do here, and I'm not sure we're going to get any closer this year. We got UConn sitting in front of us, but look, there's been lots of championships won by different sports at Alabama, and we're trying to make it a championship school. We're trying to add a national championship in one more sport that they don't have yet.
Well, Coach, on that point, I'm just curious, a theory. I've always said that I believe the programs that are not the main programs historically at schools are really good jobs, i.e. Alabama basketball, North Carolina and Duke football, Notre Dame basketball. Is there anything to being kind of the non-traditional power but gaining the actual benefits from that power, like Alabama basketball gaining from Alabama football?
Yeah, I definitely think when we first got here, a lot of people used it against us in recruiting. You know, they'd tell a recruit, like, you want to go to a football school? And I'd explain to the recruit and their parents, like, if you understand how college athletics works, the bulk of the money is in football. Like, you kind of see conference realignment working around football right now. So anybody that actually knows what's going on, when they try to tell somebody that it's a football school, well, I was like, yeah, great. That helps. We've got a lot more money here than a lot of other places do. And, you know, and football are the two that bring in the most money, and they're able to spend money. But the better your football program is, the more money comes into the athletic department, the better it is for every athlete in the athletic department, not just men's basketball, but everything from, you know, women's soccer to softball. We've got great coaches in all of our sports, and I built relationships with most of them. And shoot, I had Coach Murphy with softball, who's won multiple national championships, come talk to our guys, and he was great. Kind of talked about this whole word mudita that they've adopted, and our players really bought into that. But I think all of our coaches would agree that being at a school with a dominant football program, and I think we've got the best football program in the country, it only helps. So anybody that tries to use that against us in recruiting, they're actually hurting themselves. And I think we've proven that we can recruit pretty good classes. We've got a great class coming in. We've had great recruiting classes since we've been here. So it 100% helps to have other really good programs in your athletic department.
Nate Oates, Alabama head coach, got the Final Four coming up this weekend against that little tiny UConn program with the coach, Danny Hurley, that's brother Bobby, hired him in Buffalo. No big deal. Just to Alabama in their first Final Four. Coach, awesome job. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Appreciate you guys for having me on. Roll Tide.
All right, there he is, Nate Oates, Alabama basketball coach, getting ready for UConn this weekend. Simple, easy matchup, right? Just going up against UConn. No big deal. Donovan Klingon, so easy to stop. Wow. All right. Coming up, LSU, Iowa. Maybe the game of the year in any sport so far. We'll dive into that next on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
LSU, Iowa. Lived up to the hype. Is there a game? Iowa advances, by the way, for those just tuning in, and maybe you don't know, but I think the reaction today, everybody does know that this was a game that everybody watched, which is awesome. Iowa advancing to the Final Four with a 94-87 win over LSU. Was this the game of the year so far in any sport? Like, as crazy as that sounds, considering it's not the Final Four? Like, if we're going to think about some of the great games we've seen in the NFL in the new year, college football bowl games, any NBA game, I mean, this has to be right up there with the Super Bowl. I mean, anything. This was that good last night. Lived up to the hype. Caitlin Clark with 41 points, 12 assists, 7 rebounds. Angel Reese, while getting banged up and hurt in the first half of this game, up 34-29 with 8:01 to go in the second quarter. She left with an ankle injury and a block attempt that was ruled a foul on Caitlin Clark. She comes back. She has 17 points and 20 rebounds while getting banged up. I mean, it's just remarkable what we saw. And Iowa, the third quarter was key. They were up 69-58 after the third quarter after being tied 45 apiece at the half. Caitlin Clark had 31 points, 8 assists, and 5 rebounds through three quarters. She had 12 points in the third quarter. And for the game, guys, 9 three-pointers made, tying an NCAA tournament record on the women's side. This lived up to the hype.
Just quickly, the only thing that first came to mind as a game this calendar year that might have lived up to the hype, and I would still put LSU Iowa ahead of it, was Buffalo Kansas City in the divisional round. You had Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, those two go to battle in the playoffs yet again, and it comes down to the wire. That one, it's the first thing that came to my mind, but again, I would put LSU Iowa ahead of that.
What about the Super Bowl? Overtime? No? No, not the Super Bowl?
Maybe.
Brock Purdy, Patrick Mahomes? I thought that was compelling. Like, the game lived up to the hype, the storylines, Andy Reid, Kyle Shanahan. I digress. But to your point, I think this game absolutely was a heavyweight fight. And, I mean, there was the back and forth. There was the ebbs and flows. I mean, you saw Iowa come up, jump on LSU, 17-9 before you could blink. Kim Mulkey gets the timeout. Then LSU goes on a 22-9 run. Like, I mean, you had those ebbs and flows. You had a game that ended up being tied at 45 going into the half. And I think Caitlin Clark putting her foot on the gas to open the third quarter, hitting those three threes, is what set the tone for Iowa to take control of that game and to ultimately be able to win it, punch their ticket to the Final Four. Caitlin Clark, in that third quarter, scored or assisted on 18 of the 24 points that Iowa scored. To me, that is a true mark of her competitive greatness, being at her best when her best was required, finding a way to will her team to the win. And she got it done. And that third quarter, to me, was signature Caitlin Clark, with each successive three that she made being deeper than the previous one. She made four threes in that quarter. And, I mean, they were just awesome. And they were daggers in terms of being able to get momentum back in Iowa's favor and take it away from LSU.
Smalls, you've been hitting on it all show, the run that potentially could be in front of Caitlin Clark. Go through this, because if there is a debate as to all time, you've created that top line of the resume with the projecting out the next two wins, Smalls.
If Caitlin Clark and Iowa are able to win the title, when you look at the path that she/they would have had to go through in order to get there, it's remarkable. Not only would you have to take down your rival in Angel Reese and LSU, the team that beat you last year in the national championship, which feels like a demon that you need to slay in order for this book to be complete. Then you go on and you face UConn, one of, if not arguably, the most storied program in women's basketball, and Paige Becker is a force amongst themselves. Then, potentially, in the national championship game, you could have an undefeated South Carolina and Dawn Staley. Wow. If you can take down those three opponents in order for you to eventually win a national championship, I don't know how we don't call her the best ever. That's as tough of a trilogy of opponents as you could possibly have in order to get it done.
Yeah, and I think the part that you mentioned about her losing in the championship game last year helps to frame that, right? Because being able to get back to that stage and make sure that it's a different outcome for your team this time around a year later, that to me is special. Like, that's that leadership intangible, that quality that you assign to the all-time greats, being able to grab your team by the throat and get them to where they want to go. And everybody will acknowledge that the supporting cast that Caitlin Clark is working with is not the same supporting cast that Breonna Stewart and Maya Moore had at UConn. It's not the same supporting cast that Asia Wilson had at South Carolina. It's just not. It's different. And I think that if Caitlin Clark is able to back up the gaudy numbers with the hardware, the individual statistics and accolades leading to overall team success, then I think we view her in a different light. And that's why I say she needs the championship, because she deserves to have that as a part of the resume, given all the other things that she's accomplished at this level.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776 is the telephone number to join the show. This obviously is a hot ticket coming up, the Final Four in Cleveland starting on Friday. Games will be on ESPN. Hot ticket brought to you by Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. Get great deals on the hottest tickets. Experience it live. Does she need a title? Does she need a title to solidify every accolade that she has, she being Caitlin Clark? Dan in Pennsylvania weighing in on ESPN2. What's up, Dan?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
What's up, Dan?
Hey. First, I have to say that thanks to Pat and you, I'm terrified of those things, too, in the grocery stores. Just wanted to get that out of the way.
Oh, yeah, the robots that go around the grocery stores. Yes, Pat and I shared in our misery around them yesterday. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, they're terrifying, and they follow you around. Second, I want to get on CeCe about something. He's already putting Lamar Jackson in the Hall of Fame for two MVPs. He was a very exciting college player and probably is going to go in the College Hall of Fame, but he hasn't won anything either. But Caitlin Clark, I don't think she needs to do any more on her level, because you can compare it to other sports, kind of like Ray Bourque for the Bruins. Now, he did win a title in Colorado, but that was like the rear end of his career. But he was still one of the...
See what you guys thought
and let me know.
All right, well, I think we lost him at the end there. But CeCe, yeah, let's do the compare and contrast in terms of someone needing a title versus someone not, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, I mean, Lamar Jackson is going to the Hall of Fame. Two MVPs, yes. That's what happens. You go to the Hall of Fame in the NFL, especially at that position. Now, as far as, you know, needing the championship in college to validate her career, validate her stats, nobody is saying that Caitlin Clark isn't going to be a future Hall of Famer. Nobody's saying that Caitlin Clark isn't, you know, a really, really good college basketball player. Like, she's broken records. She's the all-time leading scorer in men's or women's college basketball history. So we have to acknowledge that. We already know that, but I'm just saying, in terms of that GOAT talk, when it comes to the greatest of all time, like, in order to get into that conversation, you got to have some hardware. Nobody is putting Lamar Jackson into the greatest of all time conversation when it comes to quarterbacks. Just because he's going to be in the Hall of Fame, there are levels to this thing. He's not going to be one of the greatest of all time. That's reserved for guys that have multiple Super Bowl rings. Guys like Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady and Joe Montana and Peyton Manning. That's a different class. And all we're simply saying is, it's great that Caitlin Clark is doing what she's doing. She's going to be a future Hall of Famer. But when it comes to that GOAT talk, like when it comes to the Breonna Stewarts and the Diana Taurasis and the Brittany Griners and the Asia Wilsons, you got to have some hardware, dog, and you ain't got it right now. And that's why I'm saying she needs that championship to validate all of the individual statistics, the accolades that she's been able to compile at Iowa.
Yeah, how many times when we talk about the greatest of all time do we throw names out there that don't have a championship or don't have that hardware?
That's an interesting one. Mike Trout? Usually,
that's a prerequisite. I'm not throwing him in that conversation. No. I think
people do.
Greatest of all time in baseball?
People say that. I'm not saying I do. Many people have said he's the greatest baseball player to ever live.
No.
I'm just telling you.
I heard that. That's outrageous.
I heard that.
And I know that people talk about his greatness, but I think for most athletes and most sports, when we start that greatest of all time conversation, winning a title is a prerequisite.
Yeah.
You know, there's a difference between the Tom Brady's and the Dan Marino's of the world, and I love Dan Marino. Dan's the man. But we don't automatically throw him in that conversation, despite the records, despite the talent, because he doesn't have the ring.
I mean, matter of fact, that's what we remember him for the most, not having a ring, just like Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley was a phenomenal NBA player. But what do we remember about Charles Barkley? He ain't got a ring. Like, when he's sitting up there on the set with Ernie and Kenny and Shaq, they what do they talk about? The fact that Charles ain't got a ring. Like that's the conversation.
What are they talking about? Constantly, 24/7.
Yeah, exactly.
Any which way they can find a way to work in that Chuck doesn't have a ring, they do that. By the way, quick side note on this. Baseball is very interesting. Griffey Jr., no ring. Bonds, no ring. Trout, no ring. Like, it's interesting how many great players don't have a ring in baseball. I think we focus on basketball and football more in terms of the ring debate. We can continue this conversation, but coming up, it is April 2nd. So what does that mean? Chris Canty's going to end some of your NFL seasons. We'll explain next. It's Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and
The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio. From number 5 to number 1.
The best of the best of the best, sir.
These are the Chris Canty Power Rankings.
Ah, yes. Little football music. Y'all know what we like to do on Tuesdays. We like to rank stuff. So these are my power rankings. She is Michelle Smallman. He is Evan Cohen. I am Chris Canty. And these are my power rankings for teams whose season is already over in the NFL in early April. So, Javonte, without further ado, let's get to it.
Number 5.
Number 5 is going to be the New York Jets. And we all know the story with the Jets. They're going to win the offseason with the headlines and the flashy acquisitions. They signed Tyron Smith from the Dallas Cowboys. They signed Mike Williams, who was cut by the Chargers. They even traded for Hassan Reddick, who's a guy that had 50 and a half sacks over the last 4 years. The only player in the NFL to have 11 or more sacks in each of the last 4 years other than Hassan Reddick is Myles Garrett. They've got all of the flashy pieces, but guess what? It never translates to team success. They always find a spectacular way to implode. And last year, it just so happened to be 4 snaps into the season when Aaron Rodgers tore his Achilles. But then all of the subsequent things that we heard and saw from the New York Jets, from Zach Wilson not wanting to go back to being a starter after he was benched, to Rob Saleh interrogating his assistant coaches for their cell phones and wanting to know who was leaking information to the media. It is an absolute train wreck, and that's what happens when you invite a tornado like Aaron Rodgers into an already dysfunctional franchise like the New York Jets. So yeah, we know that they've got a championship defense. Yeah, we know they've got a lot of good skill position players. And yes, we know that they've addressed their weakness, which is the offensive line. I'm still not buying that it's going to translate to this team ending the longest playoff drought in North American team sports. So excuse me if I'm skeptical about the prospects of what the Jets are going to be in 2024. Their season has already ended, and we haven't even gotten to the NFL draft. Next.
Number 4.
The Tennessee Titans. You let a third of your offense walk out of the door in Derrick Henry and you're getting nothing for him. A compensatory pick in 2025 that ain't going to help Will Levis in 2024. They went out and they did add Calvin Ridley, gave him a bag of money from Jacksonville. That should help a young quarterback. They add Lloyd Cushenberry, a center and interior offensive lineman, to go and play alongside Peter Skoronski, a first-round pick from a year ago. But I just don't think that they've done enough for Will Levis going into his first full season as the full-time starter, and for a rookie head coach in Brian Callahan to make them a true contender. You look at the division that they play in, you got to deal with Trevor Lawrence and C.J. Stroud in the AFC South. You look at the conference that they're in, you got to deal with Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Joe Burrow, amongst others. It ain't going to happen for the Tennessee Titans based on what they have on their roster, and it's going to be a tough road to toe for rookie head coach Brian Callahan. Next.
Number 3.
The Denver Broncos. Who the hell is your quarterback? Who the hell is your quarterback? You don't have a quarterback. That is a huge question that Sean Payton is going to have to answer, but it's clear that he didn't want the other guy, Russell Wilson, that they gave a bunch of money to, $250 million a year prior. They're going to eat over $80 million in dead money this year. So in order for your team to field a competitive roster, you're going to have a lot of players on controllable contracts. And then beyond that, you're going to have a difference maker at quarterback. I don't know how they do both of those things. First of all, they don't have a second round pick this year because that belongs to the New Orleans Saints via the Sean Payton acquisition. Okay, so there's that part of it. Then you also acknowledge, yeah, you know what? We have a huge hole at the quarterback spot, and we don't pick until 12th overall in the NFL draft. And all of these teams that are looking for quarterbacks know that they've got to get in the top 10. So you don't have the draft capital to add premium talent at cheap cost. You don't have enough draft capital to move into the top 10 to get one of these signal callers. The Denver Broncos are in a way, and then you consider the division that they play in with Patrick Mahomes and now Justin Herbert with Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers. Yeah, it's not going to happen for the Denver Broncos in 2024. Next.
Number two.
The New England Patriots. We're hearing grumblings about the Patriots potentially trading out of the third overall pick, and it's the highest draft pick that they've had since Robert Kraft bought the team. So that is interesting. But in year one with Elliott Wolf and Gerard Mayo, it doesn't seem like there's a consensus on what they want to do and whether or not the team is going to try to be competitive this year versus acquiring picks and cap space for the future. It just feels like they're caught betwixt and between, and there is this push and pull dynamic in terms of what the standard has been in New England and the shortest, quickest path to getting back to that. And I feel like this year might be a step back in order to take two forward. And that's why I wouldn't rule out the possibility that they actually do decide to trade down and acquire multiple first-round draft picks, both in this year's draft and for the future. So I'm looking at the Patriots as the team that the Minnesota Vikings could do the dance with in order for the Vikings to get out to take a quarterback and the Patriots potentially sliding back. Again, considering what the AFC is as a whole, considering the division that you play in, it might make more sense. I know that Evan is putting his head in his hands, but that's the reality of where the New England Patriots are. But there can only be one team whose season is clearly over before it starts.
Javonte, number one.
That would be the Carolina Panthers. And why is it over? Because you have an impetuous owner in David Tepper who loves to fire his head coaches before the season ends. I mean, what is it? Three straight coaches that he's fired in the middle of the season? I mean, he did it with Frank Wright. He did it with Matt Rhule. Who knows? It could happen with Dave Canales. I don't know. And that's the problem with an owner like David Tepper. You just can't stay the course long enough for somebody to realize their full vision for what this team could be in terms of being able to get them to a place where they can be consistently competitive. And what's really sad is that you play in the softest division in all of pro football, which is the NFC South. That is a low par to clear. And yet the Carolina Panthers can't even get up to get to the point where they can jump over it. That's the problem when you're dealing with somebody like David Tepper. And I feel like Bryce Young is the one that's going to be the victim in all of it, because he's a tremendous talent coming out of college, but we're not going to see him realize his potential because he's played for a franchise that's so dysfunctional that they've let the career get knocked out of him. So that is the list. Teams whose seasons have ended before it even gets started, and we're in early April, you got the Carolina Panthers number one, you have the New England Patriots two, Denver Broncos three, Tennessee Titans four, New York Jets five. Smalls, you are my accountability partner. Any objections, any omissions?
Well, the Jets is the one that's certainly going to pop out to people because of the talent that they have on that team. I think if you did a blind taste test or a blind resume of the New York Jets and you just looked at the talent on the roster and then thought, oh, we're bringing back a multiple-time MVP Super Bowl champion quarterback that's going to be healthy in a division where you do have some question marks, I think a lot of people would maybe pick them to compete for the division, but you're saying, no, you don't care about the talent. It's all in the laundry.
Yeah, because you're not bringing back a multiple-time MVP quarterback. That's not who Aaron Rodgers is in his career anymore. He's not that. We saw it at the end in Green Bay. He had a winning end game week 18 at home against the Detroit Lions, and you lost when the Lions had nothing to play for. And then you had an Achilles injury four snaps into your tenure as a New York Jet. You're not getting the guy that won multiple MVPs 3 or 4 years ago. That's not who he is anymore. And I think it's completely unfair to expect him to be that. So if he's not going to be that, is having Aaron Rodgers on this team worth all of the headache, all of the baggage that has come along with him over the last calendar year? I'm skeptical that it will be.
Carolina, New England, Denver, Tennessee, the Jets. That's the top five of teams that CeCe has their teams that we can count out already. Believe it or not, the one that actually jumps out at me the most is Tennessee. ESPN bet is their over-under at 6.5. It's a much better division than it was a couple of years ago. I just have an odd belief in Will Levis for whatever reason. I saw enough to make me think he could be okay. And they certainly made a lot of additions, as CeCe mentioned, around their team. They did lose Derrick Henry. I think that was by design in terms of paying a running back that much money. 6.5 ESPN bet over-under is going to be an interesting one to follow for us this year, because I could see them maybe hitting the over. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. I just don't know that the season is over yet.
There's a lot of money for Derrick Henry.
Well, for them?
Yeah.
Wasn't he asking for like $10 million a year from them?
He didn't get $10 million a year. He got, what, $9 million a year from the Baltimore Ravens?
And only nine or ten million is guaranteed.
I don't know. For a young quarterback to be able to have somebody that you can turn around and hand the ball to, it just makes a lot of sense. 22 takes a lot of pressure off of everybody involved.
Yeah. 2 years, $16 million, $9 million guaranteed.
So $8 million a year?
Yeah, I understand why they didn't do it. I get what your argument is. By the way, one other thing on running backs, Adam Schefter is reporting that J.K. Dobbins, formerly of the Ravens, is visiting the Chiefs. He's coming off of an injury that he is in Kansas City on a visit with the Chiefs. Boy, if he's healthy, guys, it's an interesting one to just all of a sudden, we'll take a flyer on him.
If there was ever a big if, it's J.K. Dobbins being healthy.
Understood. Okay. One other thing on the Chiefs, Schefter just tweeted out that he spoke with PR for the NFL, that the league is looking into and monitoring the situation with Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice.
Yeah, that's not
so
good.
Well, what does that mean, CeCe, when Schefter that's says that the league is saying that?
When the league is monitoring, it's one thing for the team to be monitoring. When the league is monitoring, that's not good.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Coming up, we got
best bet. He's going to miss time this year.
Oh, boy. We got best bet and unsportsmanlike moments of the day next. We're on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
All right, time to win some money.
Canty's best bet.
I'm talking dollar bill, y'all. We're chasing that bag, y'all.
Of the night.
Well, we didn't chase it. We got to it last night. I mean, the Iowa-LSU game, it didn't disappoint in terms of entertainment value, but it also didn't disappoint when it came to making that coin. We went with the two-leg parlay, over 168.5 combined points from the two teams. Check that box. And then Iowa on the money line. Check that box. Only reason I'm disappointed a little bit is I couldn't bet the over on Caitlin Clark points because they didn't have the over for Caitlin Clark points, but I'm sure she would have went over because she dropped 41 on their head. So anyway, we're going to go back with basketball, but back to the association. Tonight, we got the Rockets visiting the Minnesota Timberwolves. So we're going to take the Timberwolves laying the 5.5 points, and we're going to take Jalen Green from the Rockets going over 3.5 made three-pointers. So the last 10 games, Jalen Green is averaging over 4 3-point makes a game. So we're going to take the over on Jalen Green made three-pointers. That two-leg parlay pays out at plus 358. So it's got a little bit of juice to it.
Ooh, I like that.
CeCe, I got to ask you a question. I think everybody's allowed this for a year. I feel like you're a bigger Timberwolves fan than you are a Lakers fan this year.
Ooh.
And when I mean everybody's allowed it for a year, there are those years in sports where you're like, I just love this specific team, this specific group, kind of more than I love my own team. I'll get back to my own team maybe in a year. It wouldn't be good fandom, and you would not want my rules of fandom of all people in the world. Mine are not the ones you want. I'm just making a claim. I think you're a bigger Timberwolves fan than Lakers this year.
No, that's not it. I'm just betting the Timberwolves tonight because the line is bigger with Lakers-Raptors. I'm not laying 12.5 points with the Lakers on the road against the Raptors. I'm just not.
Yeah, but
I feel much better about laying 5.5 with the Timberwolves at home against the Rockets. Just saying.
I'm going to yeah butt that.
Go ahead.
Did you not say to Tim Legler, hey, I have trouble sleeping sometimes because I stay up late to watch the Timberwolves games.
And the
did
Lakers
you not
games.
Say that?
And the Lakers games.
I know, but you have an
game.
End. You have Hold an on. End now. There's
you
an
can,
end.
You can have your favorite team and your favorite player to watch could be on another team.
Yes.
And I feel like that's you with the Lakers and so Anthony
it's
Edwards.
My favorite team is the Lakers, but I think next up, the next face of the NBA will be Anthony Edwards. So I want to watch that.
I'm just saying. Just saying. Time now for
it's
the unsportsmanlike moment.
I'm not a Timberwolves fan. What are you talking about? Crazy. It's crazy talk.
Unsportsmanlike.
He survived a terrible, terrible moment in our history.
The most unsportsmanlike moment of the day.
That was terrible.
Was not a great look.
Well, guys, we've had a lot of proper praise and love for Caitlin Clark today, and she has deserved every part of it. We did not go, though, as far as a caller went last night on game night here on ESPN Radio with Q Myers and Emmett Golden.
Let's go out to Arizona, talk to Ty. Ty, welcome to game night.
Straight up, I got to let you know, it's the women's tournament. All due respect to those boys, but the women are throwing it down. The competition is more fierce, more evenly matched, most anticipated head-to-head competitions. Caitlin Clark is the GOAT. Out here in Arizona, we got the Final Four tournament here for the men. I wish it was the women's. I wish I could go see Caitlin Clark be the GOAT, close it out in the championship gang. Caitlin, will you marry me? Please, let's do this.
All right, well, there you go.
That's what I'm talking about. Top that.
We got a marriage proposal right here on game night. Ty,
let's
come on
go.
Down to Cleveland, man. I'm in Cleveland. Come on, you know. You Ty, can come on and hang out.
Ty, don't count on Emmett. Ty, Emmett will leave you hanging. You got a better chance to hang with your boy here in Vegas. You ain't that far from me. You're in Arizona. We can kick it. I'll pick up the phone. Emmett? Nah, that's another cat. He ain't going to pick
saying,
up the phone.
You can't get in touch with Caitlin out there in Arizona. She's going to be in Cleveland.
We had a marriage proposal last night, and then Emmett actually went a little too far by suggesting that the guy come to Cleveland with him so he can try to get him in the arena to propose to Caitlin Clark last night.
Shoot or shoot. If anyone
fair.
Would appreciate
that,
it's Caitlin Clark,
That's
who is
fair.
Definitely a shooter. But the fact that Ty used his moment on a national platform to shoot a shot with Caitlin Clark, tip of the hat. I love that.
I thought well Emmett was proposing to the guy. I thought he was like...
Wait, you took that as Emmett proposing to Ty?
Yeah, I thought he was like, come here. If Caitlin Clark says no, we can get married. I thought that's what he was saying.
Emmett married with two kids, but proposed to Ty last night on national radio.
He did propose that Ty come to Cleveland and hang out with him.
There was a proposal of sorts.
There was a proposal of sorts, yeah.
Mm. You got some inner show workings there that maybe Q can't get a hold of Emmett on the phone when he tries to call him. You kind of got that in there as well. Just throwing that at one out there. All right, next one, unsportsmanlike moments. Shout out to Pat Costello who found this one. So Ryan Reeves is on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And Ryan Reeves was being interviewed by Sportsnet about promoting basically the game of hockey. Let's take a listen.
I got a question for you, though. Whose rule is it that I can't wear a – I got to keep a shirt on here?
It's not my rule.
No.
You can
– If we want to start catching the NFL and NBA, we're going to have to start marketing this body a little bit. All right?
I have no problem with it. I don't – above my pay grade, Ryan.
All right. You let me know who it
I'm
is.
I'm keeping my shirt on, though.
All right. That's fair.
We don't want to market it that good.
I got a question for you, though. Whose rule is it?
Interesting. So basically he is suggesting that maybe the NHL can catch up to the NBA and the NFL if players did interviews post-game shirtless.
So Ryan Reeves is one of the great characters in hockey. I covered him when he was with the Blues.
Uh-huh.
He's fun to watch on the ice. He's fun off the ice. And I like the creativity there. You know, if he's saying how are we going to get more eyeballs to hockey, if everyone had to do post-game interview shirtless. I don't know if people would be into that, but it would certainly be a talking point. I think more people would pay attention just to see what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, hockey guys are some of the most fun guys to ever be around.
They're
like,
awesome.
I mean, just to kick it with, I'm just saying, those guys know how to have a good time, and they are full of personality. I just wish they'd have an opportunity to show more of that personality. Maybe that's what Ryan Reeves is talking about. I loosen up a little bit when it comes to the post-game press conferences and taking questions in the locker room. I'm here for it.
CC, Smalls and I have been to a million locker rooms covering sports over the course of the last 20 years or so. We've never been on the other side of it. Is it weird? Like, you're done with practice, you're changing, you're showering, you're getting dressed, and here comes 100 people in a locker room that they're not supposed to be a part of. Is that weird for you guys as players?
No, they are supposed to be a part of it. That's part of the business. You like the check you get, don't you? Well, the media helps you grow the game and bring in all the interest, ergo bring in all the money. So players in the NFL are well aware of that, and we got no problems with it. If media availability is going to lead to more commas in my check, then I'm cool with it. Bring in more reporters.
But I think the environment matters. I can tell you, I didn't like going into the locker room after games. So I wish that there was a different gathering space sometimes, because I'm sure while you appreciate that the media is part of growing the game, it's part of your job, I'm sure you wish that you didn't have to do it fresh out of the shower, right?
Doing interviews butt naked? I mean, sometimes it ended up being funny. How uncomfortable can we make this news reporter that's coming in here asking me all these questions? How uncomfortable can I make the guy that's the local anchor at the
report
at the station? How uncomfortable can I make him by being... No, I'm just serious. I'm kidding. But all I'm simply saying is I think it's one of those things where having access to the locker room allows them to get better information because the players are more disarmed. You got a better chance at being able to get the soundbite when the guy's in front of his locker than you do when the guy's at the podium.
Totally.
But now I'm thinking of like the actual like sit down with Ryan Reeves, where he's just shirtless. It's just like in the professional non-locker room sit down, sitting down with like a regular in like reporter shirtless. Greeny coming up next. We are on to Wednesday. We're on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.